The changing role of school counselors. If you are of a certain age, you probably remember having a guidance counselor in your school who helped you schedule classes and maybe handed out college applications. Well, not to make you feel old, but that type of counselor went out with the typewriter. Today, school counselors work in many ways to advocate for the well-being of students, from navigating crises and societal pressures to working with students with unique needs. In this era of rising anxiety, drug misuse, and increased school violence, counselors fulfill a bigger role than ever before. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the role of school counselors today and learn about new programs to help Maine kids, especially those in rural schools. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. School counselors have a lot on their plates these days, with kids under greater pressure and schools stepping up their roles in students' lives. Today, we'll learn what school counselors do and whether there is a growing demand for counselors at all grade levels. Joining me in the studio, Deborah Drew, who is director of the graduate counseling programs at Husson University, as well as a certified professional school counselor and educator. Rebecca Schwartz-Mehta is a psychology professor at the University of Maine and director of the Peer Relations Lab. And joining us on the line, Angela Avery. She is a school counselor at Biddeford Middle School and Maine's 2018 School Counselor of the Year. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have a child who has needed the help of a school counselor? Have you ever considered going into the field of school counseling? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Or you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, all of you. Deb, I'm going to start with you. You were a counselor yourself. You teach counselors now. Give us the broad overview. What falls under this term, school counselor?
Okay. Yes, thank you, Jennifer. School counselors work with all kids in grades K through 12 in schools, and they are charged with working with all children in the schools across what the profession typically refers to as the three domains of academic, career, and social-emotional. Basically, what that means is that school counselors help children adjust and do well in their academics and may do some advising around academics as well, that they are charged with also kind of leading the way in helping kids explore career pathways and learn about themselves and careers throughout the K through 12 spectrum and transition on to what training they may do beyond high school at the post-secondary level, and then also provide supportive counseling for those social and emotional issues that all of us carry from our lives into all that we do. And of course, for children in schools, that's into their schoolwork that may interfere in some way with their progress or just need some attention along the way.
Deb, how long have you done this work?
I started in education in 1975 and then moved directly into school counseling after about 2 years of teaching.
So my follow-up question to that is, in your life experience in this field, how has school counseling changed?
I would say that the emphasis on the social and emotional side of things has increased as time has gone on, although the basic definition of school counseling and the kind of work that I've done as a school counselor really hasn't changed tremendously. I think I've been in the field long enough to have watched the pendulum of emphasis swing back and forth between more emphasis on the academic and career side and then more emphasis on the social-emotional side and trending a bit now back to more emphasis, particularly in career development.
So, Angela, congratulations on being selected as Maine's 2018 School Counselor of the Year. Tell us what a day in the life of a middle school counselor looks like.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so honored to have received that award and to represent MESCA, the Maine School Counseling Association, this past year. A day in the life of being a middle school counselor is never boring, that's for sure. I kind of joke to my interns that I need to wear sneakers running around the school because literally we're running and we're putting out fires and supporting students of all different needs throughout the day. But certainly with middle school comes adolescence and puberty, hormones, different changes in their life. Sometimes it's the first time that they experience grief or can really understand what the grief process is like. So that's a big thing. Another huge thing is social media, technology, that sort of consumes a lot of their lives as young teenagers. And so there's always different issues coming out from that. So we are there to listen and help them. It's just, it's a great place to be. I love being in the middle school, and it certainly is changing all the time. There's always another place where we're needed. Certainly home issues and friendship drama, they like to call it in my middle school. Lots of drama, things coming up and social skills. So yeah, it's fun. It's never boring.
You talk about social drama. Do you have trouble getting kids to actually open up and talk to an adult about that kind of thing?
I think they want to talk to adults. That's sort of a misconception, I think, with at least in the middle school ages that, you know, they don't really want to talk to adults. I think it's normal that they might gravitate away from their parents at that time, and no parent should take that personal. Mm-hmm. It's actually a normal thing, and it's a good thing that they start to branch out during middle school and learn to trust other people. But I find in my role in the school, as you know, as long as I can be approachable and become somebody that looks like I'm okay, look like I'm cool maybe and fun to talk to, you know, I walk around the lunchroom just to say, hi, how was your weekend? They start to see, okay, maybe I could go to her and share this problem I'm having on the bus or the fact that I just don't feel like I'm being respected by some peers out on recess. I think that they want to share that type of thing. And with the social drama, it consumes them, I think, especially with being online a lot and on their cell phones. And so they really need a place where they can sort of divulge all of those issues and get some feedback.
Well, Becca, your work as a psychologist looks at how to help kids deal with social emotional programs problems. Tell me about Impact Me, the project that you're working on, and how that what that means to Maine schools that you work with.
Yeah, thank you. So Impact Me, or Impact Maine, is a community outreach organization that I founded when I took my faculty position at the University of Maine to sort of bridge what we're learning about why and how can kids come to experience emotional, academic, and behavioral issues. What we learn in the lab, we're trying to bridge that with the community and in the schools. And of course, schools are where all of the kids are, and so we can have the most impact if we go into the schools. And so what I do is I partner with school districts around the state to provide professional development training and referral services for kids and talk to teachers and families about mental health issues. But really the focus of our work over the last couple of years has been to partner with specific school districts to actually go in. So myself and a team of graduate students go in and we actually deliver an evidence-based intervention in the context of normally scheduled guidance classes for kids. Right now we're working with kids in kindergarten, second grade, fifth grade, and seventh grade, sort of across the K-8 spectrum, in the hopes of arming them with more adaptive coping skills so that they can deal with the stress in their lives, the stress that we all experience, but get them more adaptive ways of handling that stress so that it doesn't progress to the point of, you know, developing depression and anxiety and behavioral issues.
So you're trying to give kids the kind of tools that somebody might get if they have the opportunity to see a counselor, but to do it proactively before they have a stated issue and then they need the tools in the toolbox?
Absolutely, yeah. So there are so many reasons why someone can come to experience distress, you know, genetics, environment. One of those is just sort of unhelpful or maladaptive ways of dealing with stress. You know, they engage in maladaptive coping skills. So just as you said, the idea is to get everybody good coping skills so that hopefully they never have to see us in the clinic. That's really the goal.
And my understanding, Becca, is that your organization works primarily with rural schools. What is it about rural schools that is different than, the sort of a national average school? What are kids dealing with in rural communities that is a little bit different?
So I think rural communities have particular challenges. I mean, I think all communities do, but in terms of particular challenges of rural communities, and Deb, please jump in on this as well. You know, some studies have shown that rates of distress and disorder can be higher. You know, some don't necessarily bear that out, but what we do know is that typically in rural communities, there's less access to, lots of mental health care resources. And so, you know, that's one reason why the schools are such an amazing place to sort of reach kids and help kids, because all kids or most kids are there. And then if we look at rates of, you know, very serious issues like suicide, for instance, unfortunately, suicide rates are higher in rural communities, potentially because of the lack of access to mental health care, but also because of the lack of, or the actual access to firearms.
So Greater access to guns.
If I could chime in just a bit on that, too. I also think that some of my work has also been in rural counseling in my career. And some of the things that I believe are true, especially in the state of Maine, is that particularly over the last two decades, the rural areas in our state have experienced significant job loss and loss of opportunity for employment. We're in a transition phase right now, but I believe that one of the major things that kids come to school with is a lack of hope based on having watched the economic downturn and the loss of opportunity in their own communities and grown up in that kind of an environment. So I think we have some particularly unique challenges in Maine to deal with there. And then also certainly the drug issues that we struggle with in the state of Maine, as across the nation, impact kids as well. And some of those are particularly bad in rural areas.
Let me throw this out there, too. And Angela, I'm going to start with you here. Do you think there are greater social emotional problems? So you hear so much about the anxiety and the pressures facing kids today. Is that sort of the big elephant in the room, the big issue that you're facing?
It is. I think I really do think that we are experiencing a lot more on their plate. I do think there's a lot more going on in the society right now, you know, sort of a negative culture depending on where people are at. Again, I keep pushing technology is a big thing, but it is. It's out there. It's more advancing all the time, and our kids are connected so much. I do think that there's just so much for them that is in their face that they are aware of, that perhaps, you know, when we went to school, I know maybe not that long ago, but, you know, it wasn't like that. All of these things weren't in our face. We didn't open up our phone in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning and know that there was, you know, a gun threat somewhere or just different things. And so I think that really is taking a toll on students, no matter where they are. And I absolutely think the rural areas, they can be hit harder because there is that lack of access, fewer counselors available and fewer resources in the community.
Well, let's talk about numbers a second. And Deb, I'll turn to you. I read this morning that the recommended number is one school counselor for every 250 students, and that Maine is about one to you're shaking your head. That's not enough. Is that what you think?
Yes, that was my reaction, was that that's crazy.
But in Maine, it's about one to 315, which sounds terrible, but actually better than so much of the nation.
Yes. When we look strictly at ratios, the recommendation from the American School Counselors Association and actually written into the regulations in Maine as well are 1 to 250. And at the lower levels, sometimes that number gets stretched to 1 to 350 as being acceptable. But I completely agree that when you boil it down to the reality of the everyday interaction, that that's nowhere near enough counselors to work with kids.
Angela, do you believe that there's more of a need for counselors in early grades these days?
I think, yeah, I do. I think that certainly I want to echo Deb's comment that it's certainly, we are grateful in Maine that the numbers are not as high as some other people. I visited in Washington, D.C. with the American School Counselor Association, and I connected with other counselors from around the country. I mean, there's one counselor to 800 students, for example, in different places. So we are grateful here that our numbers are lower, but I will tell you, being in a school, there's two of us school counselors, and we have 600 students, so I'm working with about 300, and I am swamped. I can barely keep up with that. So, yes, and as far as earlier grades, definitely. I think it's the same as everywhere else. You know, if we can get early interventions, get our students connected, the younger that they are with the needs that, you know, that they need to have met, you know, as they come in kindergarten, there's a lot of needs at that young age. And, you know, the focus as far as what we're supposed to do as school counselors, especially at the elementary level, is to teach those students skills. You guys have mentioned today, coping skills. That is the number one thing. We want to teach them how to access help and how to support themselves when they need it, especially if they've got things going on at home and they might be isolated without resources. So, yes, I absolutely think the more counseling available to students, the younger they are, the better they're going to be as they progress through into middle school and high school.
And Angela, I know you have to go as we go to a break, but I want to just ask you a little bit in the wake of some of the terrible school shootings and especially looking at Florida and when, you know, people saying, you know, that the system broke down. Do you feel as though, you know, serving 300 students, that you are able to identify the students that need help? Or do you feel as though, you know, are you able to sleep at night? Do you worry that you've missed something?
I think, yes, it's a balance, obviously. You know, we do the best that we can. I have a motto that I'm going to do everything I possibly can in this day. You know, sort of limits me to that day because I know I can't possibly reach 300 kids in one day. But yeah, it's overwhelming. Certainly, I do want to bring back also the topic that was already mentioned once about suicide. Our rates of children reporting anxiety and suicide have significantly increased the last couple of years. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. But yeah, that's scary. That's scary to think about that we have young people who want to end their lives over what's going on for them, and we don't have enough resources to support them. So yes, we do the best that we can. I'm very connected to my teachers. You know, they know what to be looking for as far as signs and warning signs and things of a child who needs someone to talk to. But certainly we could always use more.
All right. And before we let you go, I want to end on a positive note. What's your favorite part of your job?
Oh, thank you. I love my job. Let's see. I love two things. One, that we get chocolate milk at lunchtime. I do need to throw that out there. My students love that. And number two, I do want to say just that middle schoolers tell you like it is. The 12, 13, 14-year-olds, they will tell you if your haircut's not great, if your, you know, that yellow dress doesn't look good. They'll tell you, you know, if something wasn't great today. I just love that honesty. We need more honesty.
The other two guests are nodding in the studio as you talk to us, Angela. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Angela Avery is school counselor at Biddeford Middle School and 2018 Maine School Counselor of the Year. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do InSource Renewables, committed to providing renewable energy solutions that support Maine's communities, workers, and the planet. InSourceRenewables.com. And Beth's Farm Market of Warren, offering fall hay rides, corn maize, fresh-pressed apple cider, and pumpkin donuts now into November. Beth'sFarmMarket.com. And Federally Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at federallylawmaine.com.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Claire Tomalin. She's best known for her biographies of Dickens and Mary Wollstonecraft, but now she's written a memoir. It's about her family, her career, and grief.
Writing about myself has not been easy. I have tried to be as truthful as possible, which has meant moving between the trivial and the tragic.
Join us
tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. There's a new improved public affairs program now airing on Maine Public Television, the newly expanded A Man Poor and Company, which is now an hour-long program and is broadcast each afternoon at 4:30. Journalist Christiane Amanpour leads wide-ranging, in-depth conversations with global thought leaders and cultural influencers on the issues and trends impacting the world, from politics, business, and technology to arts, science, and sports. This program has just expanded and can also be seen at midnight, and it also airs at 4 a.m. and noon on the Maine Public Television World Channel.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the role of school counselors in Maine. Joining me in the studio, Deb Drew, who's a counselor educator who directs the graduate counseling programs at Husson University. And Rebecca Schwartz-Mehta is a University of Maine psychology professor. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, Betsy Webb. She is superintendent of the Bangor School Department. Thanks for calling in, Betsy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
What are you seeing in your district? How important are your school counselors?
Our school counselors have always been critical to our success, but what we're seeing is that their role is increasing. Really, the responsibilities that they have are great. They obviously have a role on the academic side, but also with the social and emotional needs of our students. And we're seeing increased demands on both sides of their job. More things that have to be accomplished on the academic side, and then greater numbers of students that need assistance with a social and emotional growth.
Do you feel as though there's a need to hire more counselors? And if so, why?
Well, we've really looked at it through our strategic plan. There are a number of people that fill roles that help with overall counseling. So we have guidance counselors, we have social workers that are licensed to counsel through crisis, we also have school psychologists, and then we have a number of what we call contracted employees, where we partner with businesses in the local community that can provide that type of services. So yes, we've seen an increase in need in all of those areas.
Is it difficult to find people to fill those jobs?
We have been fortunate in Bangor with both guidance counselors and social workers. I will share that it is difficult to find school psychologists, and that we have found that we have to go more along the lines of contracting with local businesses.
Well, Betsy, thanks so much for calling in and adding your voice to the conversation. Betsy Webb, the superintendent of the Bangor School Department. I'll turn to you, Deb. Is there a shortage statewide?
Yes, I would say there definitely is a shortage statewide. And Betsy, as she mentioned, is fortunate in Bangor to perhaps not be experiencing that as much as some places. But I can tell you that my program gets calls regularly from superintendents who are saying, don't you have somebody for us to hire? So I did take a look at one of the databases that advertises counseling openings regularly, school positions regularly, serving schools, just to see what was there currently. And in jobs that have been advertised since the end of August and are carrying over into the opening of the school year, I was able to find just in Maine that there are still 14 school counselor positions being advertised, 10 school-based mental health counseling positions being advertised, and 2 career counseling positions being advertised. How many of those are actually filled at this moment, I'm not sure, but I do know that that I'm still getting calls from districts that are still looking for school counselors in particular. So, yes.
Well, in light of that shortage, I think it highlights how partnerships, you know, can be so productive, you know, toward the end of promoting student health, both academically and emotionally. And you know, just in my own partnership with Regional School Unit 63, you know, where we are coming in and, you know, providing additional resources on top of those amazing resources that the school counselor is already doing, you know, but they are overworked and they can't possibly, you know, provide the same level of service for all students on their own. And so, you know, I think it's time that we all sort of, as stakeholders in this game of trying to promote student resilience, you know, think creatively about different ways we can partner, you know, maybe through contracts, but also through these types of partnerships, you know, with universities or other community organizations that are ready and willing to help.
We'll go to Kim, who's calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Kim. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I'm really intrigued by this conversation. I know that I had an experience with the Natural Helpers program in the mid-90s, mm-hmm. and it seemed as if this was a program that was actually taking kids who were pretty highly skilled interpersonally and had gained the trust of their peers in situations where they felt uncomfortable or in trouble for some reason. And this was, it was called the Natural Helpers Program. They were training kids to help kids. And I know by the time my daughter went to high school, it was nowhere, anywhere. And, you know, she was reticent to go to a school counselor because by that time, there's a certain amount of stigma associated with that. And so kids don't even really, if there's some sort of stigma around accessing the sorts of help that the people on your program have been talking about, then there's also that barrier that comes into play. And I'm curious as to, A, what happened to the Natural Helpers Program, and B, if there's been any sort of, is this part of the discussion at all to help kids with their own resiliency?
Thanks, Kim. I do think some school districts still have natural helpers, don't they?
Yeah, I think some schools are using students as mentors to others in a variety of ways. The program that I'm most familiar with that sounds like what Kim was talking about, we refer to as peer helpers. And I actually ran one of those programs as a school counselor myself. And I would agree with Kim's assessment that my experience with that was that the students became an extension of my services and a conduit through which kids got to feel safe and comfortable coming to me. Certainly my workload increased, it didn't decrease during that period of time because I've always believed that the if you build it, they will come phenomenon comes into play. And the more arms that you have reaching out to address issues, the more that kids learn to be comfortable, develop relationships, and bring those issues in. I think relationship is the key. And so that when you have the ability and the time to build relationships with students, with children, they will open up.
Kim, thanks for your call. We'll go to Mark calling from Belfast. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Hi. So, yeah, I'm really glad that this actually caught this conversation that's going on. I'm actually a case manager out of the Midcoast area, so I work with a lot of the different schools and a lot of providers in the area. I just wanted to say that, first of all, the school counselors have so much work on their plates that it's amazing, and it's amazing that they're even able to get a lot of their work done on a daily basis. But there's just so many barriers. I know a caller had called in, or someone had mentioned before that that you know there's 14 jobs open here, 14 jobs open there. That is like the trend everywhere throughout the entire state. Not even just counseling jobs, but you know behavioral health professional jobs, behavioral analytical technician jobs. There's just not enough support. And what I end up seeing on my end is families, you know, go to the schools, ask for this type of support, and just for what my location is, a lot of families are waiting 6 months, 9 months for that outpatient support because the school piece is just so convenient for families. A lot of the families I work with are low income and don't have transportation, can't get from here to there, have a hard time with follow through. So having that school-based clinical support is so important to a lot of the families that we work with. But I did just want to, I guess I'm curious to know, why are we seeing so many jobs open and no one filling these jobs?
I'll pick that one up too, I guess. Certainly as a counselor educator trying to educate counselors for those jobs, we're working really hard to put people through the program and back out into the field. And actually the reality is that almost all of my school counselors are getting jobs before they graduate from their program. Our challenge is the pipeline coming in. So we need people who are interested in becoming school counselors to apply for the program and to want to do the education that it takes to become a school counselor.
Do you find that many of the people who just end up becoming a school counselor started as a teacher or in another part of education?
Not as much as we used to.
Huh.
We're getting a lot of our applicants are coming from all kinds of different fields. A number of them come out of a psychology undergraduate program, some from teaching. At the point that I was trained many years ago, you had to teach for 2 years before you could become a school counselor. That has not been the case for many, many years now. So no, the pipeline is a wide variety. We don't have a set undergraduate requirement. Anybody who has a bachelor's degree and has an interest in school counseling is welcome to apply. And we find actually that diversity to be helpful.
Yeah. So, and, no. You know, as I work with undergraduates at UMaine, you know, in my graduate life, I train PhD level psychologists. But, you know, I have a lot of undergrads that come to me, you know, on a weekly basis being, I want to be a psychologist. And I really talk slowly with them through that to determine, is that really what you want to be doing? Or do you want to be on the front lines helping kids? And usually, you know, the answer is something like that. And so I talk to them about school counseling programs and things like that. So I think, you know, as the word gets out about what school counselors actually do, they're not just putting schedules together and helping with college applications. You know, they are doing the work in the trenches, the really important work that, you know, to be honest, you know, psychologists and before that psychiatrists were doing, you know, and we certainly don't have enough of those either. But you know, to Deb's point, the pipeline coming in is so, so important. So, you know, I see my role when I'm advising undergraduates about career plans, you know, to really illuminate this or social work or other things, you know, those are the people that are really seeing kids right now.
Mm-hmm. Mark, thanks so much for your call. We have Rachel on Facebook who writes, I truly appreciate the importance of school counselors and the need for more of them, but I wonder what your panelists would like to see change in the policy world as far as early childhood interventions and social policies that would make their jobs easier.
Wow, this is great. So we get to create the ideal the ideal scenario here. I mean, I think for me, it comes back to, and Angela mentioned this, about early intervention and preventative intervention. And so getting education about emotion and social issues into the hands of little kids, because they experience the problem sometimes before they even know what feelings are or how to manage their emotions or how to, you know, change unwanted types of behaviors. And so, you know, for me, it comes back to early intervention, working with these young kids, getting them good coping skills. You know, the skills that I teach kindergartners and second graders at RSU 63 are the exact same ones I teach adults in my therapy practice. They're the same thing. You know, we talk about it in different ways. But kindergartners are learning how to, you know, approach things that they want to avoid or that they're scared of, just like my, you know, adult with OCD is learning how to do. And so I think for me, it's all about early intervention and good coping.
Okay. We have an email from Gregory. My father was an elementary school principal, and I taught high school and college. 73% of the tax dollars collected in my town of Kennebunk go for public education. There is so much waste in publication, and it is treated as a sacred cow. The last thing we need is more professionals in the public school system. So, Deb, defend yourself. Why should precious tax dollars go towards school counselors?
Okay. So my initial reaction to that is, yes, we always are challenged with how do we raise enough money to do the things that we need to do, both educationally and socially in this state. And I think to the point around prevention that we're making, schools are a place where if we're doing active, proactive, preventative kinds of work, which is really the focus of school counselors, or very much tries to be, certainly interventive when we need to, but we really try to focus the program on wellness and prevention, that we can hopefully build skills in our young people that will diminish or lower their needs to access much higher cost interventions as adults or even as adolescents and young children who may have to access the hospitals and the more expensive mental health opportunities that are available in our state.
Yeah. And I would quickly argue that I would be hard-pressed to find an academic or social or employment problem on down the line that didn't have some root in sort of social and emotional issues. And so, you know, even something like school avoidance or, you know, lack of achievement in school or lack of obtaining employment, you know, there is an emotional underpinning. And so I think we are in an age where, you know, we've got to pay attention, because unlocking that or creating a healthy core there can really give rise to great outcomes.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about school counselors on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We are going to take another quick break, but first, a word about tomorrow's program. We are going to learn about service animals and how they can help people. and what does or does not count as a therapy animal. So if you have comments or questions about that topic, you can email it or send us and tweet us ahead of time. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Evergreen Home Performance, offering energy-efficient windows and insulation to help homeowners achieve year-round comfort. More at evergreenyourhome.com. And the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, presenting the Common Ground Country Fair, September 21st through 23rd. Details at mofca.org. And the Portland Food Co-op, a community-owned market featuring a wide selection of local and organic products, open to everyone 7 days a week.
Hurricane Florence is spinning toward land, bringing with it the potential for destructive winds, storm surge, and catastrophic flooding. The storm and recovery will be a major test for FEMA.
It is not something that we've had. Certainly, we've never had this on the East Coast. But I think we're very well prepared, very well set up.
I'm Ari Shapiro. Is FEMA prepared for Florence? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up shortly at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling, it's our public affairs program, World Affairs, a panel discussion on the war in Afghanistan. Again, that's coming up at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the growing need for school counselors. Joining us today, Becca Schwartz-Mehta, a University of Maine psychologist. And Deb Drew is here as well. She directs the graduate counseling programs at Husson University. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Jared, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Jared. Go ahead.
I have a child who is accepted into a school psychology program, and I've had some experience with professional psychology, and a question came up. He has a choice between becoming a school school counselor or an American Psychological Association certified therapist counselor. Now, he's going at the PhD level. I guess my own bias is that it might be wiser for him to concentrate on the research and worry less about the APA certification. I'm curious what your educators think.
Okay, so I'll try to field that one. If I understood you correctly, I think you said that right now he's been accepted into a school psychology doctoral program and that he's considering the possibility of school counseling or some other type of counseling. If that's correct, I would say that it really...
They're both school counseling programs, but one is APA certified and the other is not. They're both in the same department, interestingly.
Okay. Yeah, that's a difficult one to answer without having more details about exactly what the program is that he's doing. Our programs in school counseling are accredited by the Council for the Accreditation on Counseling and Related Educational Programs, acronym KCREP, which is similar to the kinds of accreditation that the American Psychological Association has for psychology programs. So I think the issue of accreditation is important, but I'd need to look at actually what is the training pathway and what are his goals to be able to really help answer that question.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, I think the APA accreditation really provides a level of oversight over the curriculum and the training opportunities that that the students are presented with, and sometimes later stages of training, such as the formal pre-doctoral internship or maybe even fellowships or postdoctoral placements, sometimes require that someone is trained in an accredited program. So, you know, it would be good to not only look at the types of activities that the individual wants to do, whether that's more research or clinical service, but also maybe the types of jobs that somebody would want to hold, and then kind of try to work backwards and see if accreditation is really central to that.
All right. Well, Jared, thanks for calling. Congratulations to your son. We'll go to Teresa on Facebook, who writes, young children should be taught DBT to get proper coping skills. Becca, what's DBT? And do you agree?
Oh, I love DBT. my grad students are laughing somewhere. This is great. So DBT is an acronym that stands for Dialectical Behavior Therapy. And in a nutshell, it's an evidence-based intervention for all sorts of issues, some of which relate to problems of emotion regulation, which one could argue the inability to sort of label, express, and regulate our emotions is central to lots of different psychological problems. And DBT sort of takes the best of all of our evidence-based treatments for a variety of disorders and puts them into a very actionable series of coping steps that are taught to adults. It was developed for, but has been extended to working with children and adolescents. I think it's wonderful because it's something you can do to change the way you feel, change the way you think, change the way you behave. And so I would have to agree that teaching our kids evidence-based coping strategies is really the way to go.
We'll go to Janice calling from Camden. Hi, Janice. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to point out that when the superintendent talked about partnerships within the school, that school nurses are a critical factor to working together with school counselors. We often are the first ones that see students with emotional, mental health issues, and then can team with personnel in the school to the benefit of the students and the families.
I completely agree. And one of the things I always say to my school counseling students is make friends with your school nurse. They will be your best friend and best helper in this process. Certainly that collaboration is very, very important. We also have a shortage of nurses in our state. So.
Yeah. Janice, thank you for your call. We'll move to Winslow and Chad. Hi, Chad. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. One of the things that I've been listening to the show since the very beginning, and one of the things that is coming to mind is I have several family members and friends that are professionally involved with engaging with children in a school environment. And one of the things that I hear continuously is that there seems to be a real lack of parent involvement. And I was just hoping that one of your commentators may hope to speak to that. That being said, I am in full support of having school counselors and increasing budgets to help support these children. But the thing that I'm hearing the most from the people that I know is that there seems to be a lack of parent involvement. And I'm wondering if there's any thoughts about that. I'll take my answer offline.
Chad, thanks for your call.
Yeah. Parent engagement is the phrase that we use that I think means roughly the same thing. But I know that schools often will say that they are challenged to engage parents in working directly with the school. I think the reasons for that are many. There isn't any one reason. So for some parents, their own experience with school may not be very positive, so it may not be a comfortable place for them to come. Others are busy. All of the social issues that we've been talking about come into play there as well. But I do think that schools recognize, and certainly school counselors recognize, the value of engaging parents and work really hard to try to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Chad, I totally agree with you that they're central. And I think we have to think, again, outside the box for how to, bring sort of metaphorically and physically parents in. You know, parents are strapped with lots of obligations. And, one of the things that we do at RSU 63, Susan Smith, the superintendent there, we put our heads together. How do we get parents in? Well, we need to provide food and childcare. Yes. And then let's talk to them about parenting strategies and really give them the time, time and attention and space to focus on these issues, as opposed to trying to call them in during the school day, have them take off time from work and feel like it's some sort of punitive thing.
When you say food, are you talking about maybe a regular dinner or something like that with parents? You're nodding. Yeah.
Well, that'd be great. I mean, we made it a pizza party, right. Which was really great. And childcare was key. We provided a place for the younger kids to go or the students to go so that the parents can meet with me and the other people working with their kids and just have those conversations and that protected time to do so. And I think that community engagement, parental engagement is key.
Right. All right. Go ahead.
Yes, I would just say that I agree. And even in the schools that I work with that are trying to put on parent programs that are around issues like college placement and financial aid, they're finding that when we provide food, dinners, even full dinners, parents do tend to be more engaged. And the issue of childcare, I would agree with also. And making sure that we meet parents when they can meet and not necessarily in the standard school hours.
We'll go to Gary, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, it's Gary. And you did mention my subject. I thought it perhaps wouldn't be apropos of this conversation, but I work as a private college and career counselor as well as a certified guidance counselor. And the whole high school level of college counseling, which certainly involves lots of mental health work, but at the same time, and particularly at this time of year, involves working with kids on and families on understanding, applying to, getting into, and paying for college, is one that any guidance counselor will realize takes up a big part of their time and they don't have a lot of time for it, and they have overwhelming caseloads. And I actually thought that's what this program would be more about, but I understand that this is certainly talking about K-12 education. I'd love to see a program on that because there's so much to be said about lack of high school counselors, lack of training for high school counselors, and lack of awareness of parents and kids about the whole post-high school planning, I refer to it as not necessarily college, but what are kids going to do after graduating high school?
Sure. Well, Gary, thank you so much for your call. And this is sort of tangentially touches on something, Deb, I know you wanted to talk to. There's more than one kind of thing that's a school counselor.
Okay. So let me just, if I could, just speak to his issue immediately. When I opened the show, I stressed that school counselors work across three domains, academic, career, and social emotional. And the career part of it is extremely important. As you point out, career and then transition into post-secondary, be it college or other types of training, are clearly a focus. And it doesn't just start at high school. Good career development begins pre-K and continues all the way up through the spectrum. So all school counselors working at all levels need to be really focusing and addressing those career issues and bringing those into the full academic spectrum of the school. I did want to clarify, as Jennifer pointed out, that Betsy Webb mentioned that there are social workers working in the schools and school psychologists helping to provide school-based mental health issues, but also LCPCs, as they're known in Maine, licensed clinical professional counselors, clinical mental health counselors, also are providing those services, hired as school-based mental health or contracted with agencies trying to address those needs. Back to the career thing, though, certainly the pendulum has swung back. We've got a lot of emphasis on career education going on right now, and a lot of work to be done.
We'll go to Sam calling from Bodenham. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call in such short notice. I'm an exercise physiologist, background in training youth through exercise intervention online with Stanford and doing research with that spectrum for heart transplant recipients. But what I've noticed with my research and you working with kids from ages 9 to 19, their studies are improving and their self-efficacy is improving with exercise. And I'm sure you've probably heard of the book called Spark by John Rattay. He wrote a book on how exercise, especially in youth, help develop neurogenesis and the growth of new brain cells in kids. And with that, it's increasing their self-efficacy, decreasing ADHD and ADD, and also depression. And so it's kind of it seems intuitive that our schools are spending more time for whether it's K or 12, anywhere in the spectrum, investing their time in small amounts of just movement-based exercise, not formal PE classes, but getting the children to get their heart rates up to a level that's facilitating brain cell development, improving self-efficacy, and not having to spend a whole bunch of money and cost in something that really just needs a little bit of movement. What's your take on that?
Sure, Sam. Thank you. And I will say to our listeners that just a couple months ago, we dedicated a Maine Calling program to exercise and mental health and some of the emerging research, but you were nodding, Becca.
Yeah, I mean, I think exercise is just one example of, you know, what psychologists might call behavioral activation. Just getting up and doing something is a wonderful antidote to and a cornerstone, actually, of our evidence-based treatments for all sorts of different things. And so I'm not surprised, and I do know that research, and I think that's great, and I think that should be a component of any good program.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Sam. We just have a couple minutes, and I want to touch on a couple things that have been kind of hot-button issues. And the first is bullying. It seems as though about a decade ago that was really very much in the news, is these efforts to combat bullying in the schools. Are we hearing less about it because we're doing a good job, or has our attention span just sort of moved on to other topics?
I think I would say we're not hearing less of it at all, that we're hearing about bullying all the time. I think when Angela was speaking, she was talking about the kinds of bullying, cyberbullying, basically. And I think that a lot of bullying is coming in the cyber form. And so maybe we're morphing our words around it a little more. Maine does have a regulation that says that all schools have to have a bully prevention program. Often school counselors are lead people in bully prevention. So we have been doing a lot of work, a lot of intervention, but the problem does persist.
Yeah. I would definitely agree.
And the second one being vaping, seeing it in our high schools in astronomical numbers. I believe there's an article in the major papers today, CDC calling it an epidemic. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I was actually listening to NPR on the drive here and listening about that. And I think, you know, it's the shiny new thing. And we've seen that historically, you know, things pop up. And so, you know, I have seen schools paying greater attention to that. I think that's important, you know, in the broad prevention perspective.
All right. Well, thank you all for being here. Thank you both for being here today, and also our callers. What an interesting discussion. We've been talking about school counseling on Maine Calling. Deborah Drew is here. She's the director of graduate counseling programs at Husson University and a school counselor and educator. And Deborah, how many openings do you have for a year in your counseling program?
Generally speaking, somewhere between 20 and 30 openings across all of our programs. We train school counselors, clinical mental health counselors, and human relations professionals. We certainly will be seeking school counseling people who are interested in school counseling, and we'll have openings for those in
Great.
The next year.
Also here, Rebecca Schwartz-Mehta, UMaine psychology professor and director of the Peer Relations Lab. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, service animals, what they do to help people. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.